The tight curves of the ramp made Hui dizzy. Brilliant, tiny white glow globes drifted in the central well, illuminating a purple-green vine with elephantine leaves. The vine was suspended on shimmering golden wires. The soft black surface of the ramp swallowed the sounds of their feet, making Hui extremely conscious of the faint abrasive swishing caused by the movements of her robe.
"Where are you taking me?" Hui asked.
"To the Lord Leto."
"I know, but where is he?"
"In his private room."
"It's awfully far down."
"Yes, the Lord often prefers the depths."
"It makes me dizzy walking around and around like this."
"It helps if you do not look at the vine."
"What is that plant?"
"It is called a tunion vine, and is supposed to have absolutely no smell."
"I've never heard of it. Where does it come from?"
"Only the Lord Leto knows."
They walked on in silence, Hui trying to understand her own feelings. The God Emperor filled her with sadness. She could sense the man in him, the man who might have been. Why had such a man chosen this course for his life? Did anyone know? Did Maneo know? Perhaps Duncan Idaho knew. Her thoughts gravitated to Idaho. Such a physically attractive man. So intense. She could feel herself drawn to him. If only Leto had the body and appearance of Idaho. Maneo, though, that was another matter. She looked at the back of her fish speaker escort.
"Can you tell me about Maneo?" Hui asked.
The fish speaker glanced back over her shoulder, an odd expression in her pale blue eyes. Apprehension, or some bizarre form of awe.
"Is something wrong?" Hui asked.
The fish speaker returned her attention to the downward spiral of the ramp.
"The Lord said you would ask about Maneo," she said.
"Then tell me about him."
"What is there to say? He is the Lord's closest confidant."
"Closer even than Duncan Idaho?"
"Oh, yes. Maneo is in Atreides."
"Maneo came to me yesterday," Hui said. "He said I should know something about the God Emperor. Maneo said the God Emperor is capable of doing anything at all, if it is thought to be instructive."
"Many believe this," the fish speaker said.
"You do not believe it?"
Hui asked the question as the ramp rounded a final turn and opened into a small anteroom with an arched entrance only a few steps away.
"The Lord Leto will receive you immediately," the fish speaker said.
She turned back up the ramp then, without speaking of her own belief. Hui stepped through the arch and found herself in a low-ceilinged room. It was much smaller than the audience chamber. The air felt crisp and dry. Pale yellow light came from a concealed source at the upper corners. She allowed her eyes to adjust to the lowered illumination, noting carpets and soft cushions scattered around a low mound of... She put a hand to her mouth as the mound moved, realizing then that it was the Lord Leto on his cart, but the cart lay in a sunken area. She knew immediately why the room provided this feature. It made him less imposing to human guests, less overpowering by his physical elevation. Nothing could be done, however, about his length and the inescapable mass of his body except to keep them in shadows, throwing most of the light onto his face and hands.
"Come in and sit down," Leto said.
He spoke in a low voice, pleasantly conversational. Hui crossed to a red cushion only a few meters in front of Leto's face and sat on it. Leto watched her movements with obvious pleasure. She wore a dark golden gown, and her hair was tied back in braids, which made her face appear fresh and innocent.
"I have sent your message to Ix," she said, "and I have told them that you wish to know my age."
"Perhaps they will answer," he said. "Their answer may even be truthful."
"I would like to know when I was born, all of the circumstances," she said, "but I don't know why this interests you."
"Everything about you interests me."
"They will not like it that you made me the permanent ambassador."
"Your masters are a curious mixture of punctilio and laxity," he said. "I do not suffer fools gladly."
"You think me a fool, Lord?"
"Malky was not a fool. Neither are you, my dear."
"I have not heard from my uncle in years. Sometimes I wonder if he still lives."
"Perhaps we will learn that as well. Did Malky ever discuss with you my practice of taquia?"
She thought about this a moment, then,
"It was called Ketman among the ancient Fremen?"
"Yes. It is the practice of concealing the identity when revealing it might be harmful."
"I recall it now. He told me you wrote pseudonymous histories, some of them quite famous."
"That was the occasion when we discussed taquia."
"Why do you speak of this, Lord?"
"To avoid other subjects. Did you know that I wrote the books of Noah Arkwright?"
She could not suppress a chuckle.
"How amusing, Lord! I was required to read about his life."
"I wrote that account, too. What secrets were you asked to wrest from me?"
She did not even blink at his strategic change of subject.
"They are curious about the inner workings of the religion of the Lord Leto."
"Are they now?"
"They wish to know how you took religious control away from the Bene Gesserit."
"No doubt hoping to repeat my performance for themselves."
"I'm sure that's in their minds, Lord."
"Hui, you are a terrible representative of the Ixians."
"I am your servant, Lord."
"Have you no curiosities of your own?"
"I fear that my curiosities might disturb you," she said.
He stared at her a moment, then,
"I see. Yes, you are right. We should avoid more intimate conversation for now. Would you like me to talk about the sisterhood?"
"Yes, that would be good. Do you know that I met one of the Bene Gesserit delegation today?"
"That would be Antioch."
"I found her frightening," she said.
"You have nothing to fear from Antioch. She went to your embassy at my command. Were you aware that you had been invaded by face dancers?"
Hui gasped, then held herself still while a cold sensation filled her breast.
"Othwe Yake?" she asked.
"You suspected?"
"It's just that I did not like him, and I had been told that..."
She shrugged then, as realization swept over her.
"What has happened to him?"
"The original? He is dead. That's the usual face dancer practice in such circumstances. My fish speakers have explicit orders to leave no face dancer alive in your embassy."
Hui remained silent, but tears trickled down her cheeks.
"This explained the empty streets. Antioch's enigmatic, yes. It explained many things."
"I will provide fish speaker assistance for you until you can make other arrangements," Leto said. "My fish speakers will guard you well."
Hui shook the tears from her face. The Inquisitors of Ix would react with rage against Talaelax. Would Ix believe her report? Everyone in her embassy taken over by face dancers. It was difficult to believe.
"Everyone?" she asked.
"The face dancers had no reason to leave any of your original people alive. You would have been next."
She shuddered.
"They delayed," he said, "because they knew they would have to copy you with a precision to defy my senses. They are not sure about my abilities."
"Then Antioch,
the sisterhood, and I share an ability to detect face dancers. And Antioch, well, she is very good at what she does."
"No one trusts the Talaelaxu," she said. "Why haven't they been wiped out long ago?"
"Specialists have their uses as well as their limitations. You surprise me, Hui. I had not suspected you could be that bloody-minded."
"The Talaelaxu, they are too cruel to be human. They aren't human."
"I assure you that humans can be just as cruel. I myself have been cruel on occasion."
"I know, Lord."
"With provocation," he said. "But the only people I have considered eliminating are the Bene Gesserit."
Her shock was too great for words.
"They are so close to what they should be, and yet so far," he said.
She found her voice.
"But the oral history says
the religion of the Reverend Mothers, yes. Once they designed specific religions for specific societies. They called it engineering. How does that strike you?"
"Callous."
"Indeed. The results fit the mistake. Even after all the grand attempts at ecumenism, there were countless gods, minor deities, and would-be prophets throughout the empire."
"You changed that, Lord."
"Somewhat. But gods die hard, Hui. My monotheism dominates, but the original pantheon remains. It has gone underground in various disguises."
"Lord, I sense in your words a..."
She shook her head.
"Am I as coldly calculating as the sisterhood?"
She nodded.
"It was the Fremen who deified my father, the great Muad'Dib, although he doesn't really care to be called great."
"But were the Fremen..."
"Were they right? My dearest Hui, they were sensitive to the uses of power, and they were greedy to maintain their ascendancy."
"I find this disturbing, Lord."
"I can see that. You don't like the idea that becoming a god could be that simple, as though anyone could do it."
"It sounds much too casual, Lord."
Her voice had a remote and testing quality.
"I assure you that anyone could not do it."
"But you imply that you inherited your godhood from
"Never suggest that to a fish speaker," he said. "They react violently against heresy."
She tried to swallow in a dry throat.
"I say this only to protect you," he said.
Her voice was faint.
"Thank you, Lord."
"My godhood began when I told my Fremen I no longer could give the death water to the tribes. You know about the death water?"
"In the Dune days, the water recovered from the bodies of the dead," she said.
"Ah, you have read Noah Arkwright."
She managed a faint smile.
"I told my Fremen the water would be consecrated to a supreme deity, left nameless. Fremen were still allowed to control this water through my largesse."
"Water must have been very precious in those days."
"Very. And I, as delegate of this nameless deity, held loose control of that precious water for almost 300 years.
She chewed at her lower lip.
"It still sounds calculating?" he asked.
She nodded.
"It was. When it came time to consecrate my sister's water, I performed a miracle. The voices of all the Atreides spoke from Garni's urn. Thus my Fremen discovered that I was their supreme deity."
Hui spoke fearfully, her voice full of puzzled uncertainties at this revelation.
"Lord, are you telling me that you are not really a god?"
"I am telling you that I do not play hide-and-seek with death."
She stared at him for several minutes before responding in a way which assured him that she understood his deeper meaning. It was a reaction which only intensified her endearment to him.
"Your death will not be like other deaths," she said.
"Precious Hui," he murmured.
"I wonder that you do not fear the judgment of a true supreme deity," she said.
"Do you judge me, Hui?"
"No, but I fear for you."
"Think on the price I pay," he said. "Every descendant part of me will carry some of my awareness locked away within it, lost and helpless."
She put both hands over her mouth and stared at him.
"This is the horror which my father could not face, and which he tried to prevent, the infinite division and subdivision of a blind identity."
She lowered her hands and whispered,
"You will be conscious?"
"In a way, but mute. A little pearl of my awareness will go with every sandworm and every sand trout, knowing, yet unable to move a single cell, aware in an endless dream."
She shuddered. Leta watched her try to understand such an existence. Could she imagine the final clamor when the subdivided bits of his identity grappled for a fading control of the Ixion machine which recorded his journals? Could she sense the wrenching silence which would follow that awful fragmentation?
"Lord, they would use this knowledge against you were I to reveal it."
"Will you tell?"
"Of course not."
She shook her head slowly from side to side. Why had he accepted this terrible transformation? Was there no escape? Presently, she said,
"The machine which writes your thoughts, could it not be attuned to—"
"To 1,000,000 of me? To 1,000,000,000? To more? My dear Hui, none of those knowing pearls will be truly me."
Her eyes filmed with tears. She blinked and inhaled a deep breath. Leto recognized the Bene Gesserit training in this, the way she accepted a flow of calmness.
"Lord, you have made me terribly afraid.
And you do not understand why I have done this."
"Is it possible for me to understand?"
"Oh, yes. Many could understand it. What people do with understanding is another matter."
"Will you teach me what to do?"
"You already know."
She absorbed this silently, then,
"It has something to do with your religion. I can feel it."
Leto smiled.
"I can forgive your Ixion masters almost anything for the precious gift of you. Ask, and you shall receive."
She leaned toward him, rocking forward on her pillow.
"Tell me about the inner workings of your religion."
"You will know all of me soon enough, Hui. I promise it. Just remember that sun worship among our primitive ancestors was not far off the mark."
"Sun worship?"
She rocked backward.
"That sun which controls all of the movement, but which cannot be touched. That sun is death."
"Your death?"
"Any religion circles like a planet around a sun which it must use for its energy, upon which it depends for its very existence."
Her voice came barely above a whisper.
"What do you see in your sun, Lord?"
"A universe of many windows, through which I may peer. Whatever the window frames, that is what I see."
"The future?"
the universe is timeless at its roots, and contains therefore all times and all futures.
It's true, then, she said. You saw a thing which this, she gestured at his long ribbed body, prevents.
Do you find it in you to believe that this may be, in some way, holy? He asked.
She could only nod her head.
If you share it all with me, he said, I warn you that it will be a terrible burden.
Will it make your burden lighter, Lord?
Not lighter, but easier to accept.
Then I will share. Tell me, Lord.
Not yet, we. You must be patient a while longer.
She swallowed her disappointment, sighing.
It's only that my Duncan Idaho grows impatient, Leto said. I must deal with him.
She glanced backward, but the small room remained empty.
Do you wish me to leave now?
I wish you would never leave me.
She stared at him, noting the intensity of his regard, a hungry emptiness in his expression, which filled her with sadness.
Lord, why do you tell me your secrets?
I would not ask you to be the bride of a god.
Her eyes went wide with shock.
Do not answer, he said.
Barely moving her head, she sent her gaze along the shadowy length of his body.
Do not search for parts of me which no longer exist, he said. Some forms of physical intimacy are no longer possible for me.
She returned her attention to his cowled face, noting the pink skin of his cheeks, the intensely human effect of his features in that alien frame.
If you require children, he said, I would ask only that you let me choose the father. But I have not yet asked you anything.
Her voice was faint.
Lord, I do not know what to...
I will return to the Citadel soon, he said. You will come to me there, and we will talk. I will tell you then about the thing which I prevent.
I am frightened, Lord, more frightened than I ever imagined I could be.
Do not fear me. I can be nothing but gentle with my gentle Hui. As for other dangers, my fish-speakers will shield you with their own bodies. They dare not let harm come to you.
Hui lifted herself to her feet and stood trembling. Leto saw how deeply his words had affected her, and he felt the pain of it. Hui's eyes glistened with tears. She clasped her hands tightly to still the trembling. He knew she would come to him willingly at the Citadel. No matter what he asked, her response would be the response of his fish-speakers.
Yes, Lord.
It came to Leto that if she could change places with him, take up his burden, she would offer herself. The fact that she could not do this added to her pain. She was intelligence built on profound sensitivity, without any of Malky's hedonistic weaknesses. She was frightening in her perfection. Everything about her reaffirmed his awareness that she was precisely the kind of woman who, if he had grown to normal manhood, he would have wanted.
No, demanded!
As his mate. And the Ixians knew it.
Leave me now, he whispered. I am both father and mother to my people. I have known the ecstasy of birth and the ecstasy of death, and I know the patterns that you must learn. Have I not wandered intoxicated through the universe of shapes? Yes. I have seen you outlined in light. That universe which you say you see and feel, that universe is my dream. My energies focus upon it, and I am in any realm and every realm. Thus, you are born.
The stolen journals.